Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
This is Pod Save the UK.
I'm Nish Kumar.
And I'm Coco Khan. And Nish, riddle me this. When is a racist not a racist?
Is it by any chance when they've donated £10 million to your political party, Coco?
Oh, you're good at this.
I am good at this. On this week's show, Political Journalist of the Year, Sky News' Beth Rigby is here to run through another worrisome week in Westminster.
Will the Tories have to refund donor Frank Hester? And will any other MPs follow Lee Anderson into the welcoming arms of Reform UK?
Hello, Coco.
Hi, Nish. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm just looking at my script, and this is the area that says Nish and Coco chat. It's quite a lot of pressure, isn't it? Nish and Coco chat.
Are you saying that you would like them to script our chats?
No.
So we can read, hi, Coco. How are you? I am well. This week,
keep
I have
going.
Mainly been having lunches. What have you been doing this week?
This week, well, I'm having a great day today because I've got use of my mouth back, which has been a bit of an issue.
Definitely for a podcast. I would say mouth is essential.
It's quite funny. So I had a root canal on Monday.
Yeah.
And all the last 2 days I've been at home with my other half, you know, not really being able to speak. And you know, you can tell someone's desperate to make like a wife joke.
Yeah.
That someone's desperate to be like, what, fine, what, that's how we shut her up, what, whatever. And it's not managed to find it. So I'm trying to look. It's just hard being woke, isn't it, Nish? Like, those jokes, they just don't come.
I would happily watch you do an hour of stand-up as this, whatever this character is, of sort of wife joke McGee. Like, whatever that character... How's your tooth?
Well, I'm pleased to say that I have received the care that I needed. I'm not pleased to say it was not via the NHS, because as you know, no one can get an NHS dentist appointment. But, you know.
Well, I know about the state of NHS dentistry because you've written a very good piece about it for The Guardian, which is available online.
Well, this is available online and all good news. Well, not anymore. It's an old article.
Yeah, it's an old article. You can't go to the news agents and say, you got a copy of The Guardian from about 3 weeks ago.
But yes, I did a big deep dive into it. And the main thing, this is a serious moment for the Nish and Coco designated chat area.
This is supposed to be the fun bit of the
show.
This
is the fun bit, right? Yeah. And this bit is not fun. But basically, the headline of that article is that dentistry is an example of privatisation in the NHS.
Yeah.
So if you ever have a moment where you're like, I wonder if privatisation could work. Maybe it would be better if those who can pay do pay.
Yeah.
Just look at dentistry.
Yeah.
It doesn't work. If you can afford to pay, then you basically get priced out of the NHS in the sense that they don't set services for you. They quite literally assign it by how many people will use it. So the more you don't use it, the less is assigned, if that makes sense. So it's a downward curve.
Yeah.
And then one day you find yourself in a cost of living crisis and you actually can't afford the £350.
Wow.
And then you're buggered. So anyway, going back to my dentist thing, when I came out of my, like the anaesthetic and it sort of wore off and then you have the aftercare meeting, the dentist was like, I'd really recommend to you to eat soft food.
Yeah.
And then she was like, stick to the dal and rice. Is it racist that she said that?
What's the ethnicity of the dentist?
I don't know. She was behind a mask. But there was a part of me that was like, this feels racist. Is it racist? I mean, I do like dal and rice. That is true. I'm a fan. And I probably will eat that mainly after any dental surgery. But still, it was weird.
Dal's a comfort food.
Right.
Yellow dal, Dharka dal, is like a comfort food.
It is a comfort food. But yeah. At the same, so part of me was like, is it racism? It was genuinely helpful and it was kind of spot on and it's kind of sweet, but also, what?
Stick to the dal and rice. Is your dentist a donor to the Tory party?
My God, can you imagine? Plot twist.
Which leads us on nicely to the rest of the show. It seems like every day a new Trump trial gets added to the docket and it can be confusing to know what's actually at stake for our poor pals overseas in the US.
That's where strict scrutiny comes in.
If you want to stay up to date on the latest legal drama surrounding the US's worst former president, make sure to listen and follow Strict Scrutiny on Amazon Music so you never miss an episode. Okay, let's crack into it with a phrase that's rapidly becoming the catchphrase of this podcast that we may as well cut out and just replay endlessly. It's been another difficult week for Rishi Sunak. It started with Lee Anderson, the man Sunak appointed to be the deputy chairman of the Conservative Party, jumping ship to reform UK.
People will say that I've took a gamble, and I'm prepared to gamble on myself, as I know from my mailbag how many people in this country support reform UK and what they have to say. And like millions of people up and down the country, all I want is my country back.
The Tories have been doing their best to downplay Anderson's defection, which came after he was kicked out of the party for refusing to apologise for saying London Mayor Sadiq Khan was controlled by Islamists. But what will be worrying number 10 more is the sense that more rats might be tempted to leave the sinking ship.
Don't worry though, Nish, there are still plenty of dodgy characters in the blue corner. A row's blown up this week over the Conservative Party's biggest donor, Frank Hester. He was forced to apologise after The Guardian reported that he said the MP, Diane Abbott, the first black woman elected to Parliament no less, made him, and I quote, want to hate all black women, and that she... and again, quote, should be shot. Hester, who runs a health tech firm, hasn't denied the reports and admitted making rude comments about her in a company meeting in 2019. But he said his remarks had nothing to do with her gender nor the colour of her skin, even though he mentioned her gender and the colour of her skin.
So look, there's plenty to get into with this week's guests, Sky News' politics editor and the Royal Television Society's Political Journalist of the Year, Beth Rigby.
Yeah, thanks.
Congratulations, Beth.
Thank you.
That's
it was
pretty
nice.
Cool. Yeah.
It felt nice. The last award I won was Hedge Fund Writer in 2006 when I worked at the Financial Times. So it was really nice. It's been a journey, right?
Yeah.
It was nice.
That makes me feel better hearing that because I always have this begrudging thing where every year this list comes out of like Asian people and I'm never on the list.
Wait, what's the list of Asian people? I don't even know about the list.
It's not like a Home Office thing. I mean,
yeah,
like
that's what I would be. People start making lists of Asian people. That's the last thing I want is my name to be on there.
You know how it is.
What, is that going to be a list of people on a flight to Rwanda?
No, there's always a list that comes out being like, oh, you know, diversity in media or whatever. And I never get on the list and I'm always really salty about it. But I'm delighted to hear that you too have been shunned for awards.
It. Yeah. I'm not married, even though Wikipedia says I am. I'm actually not married and I feel like I've led my life being the bridesmaid and never the bride in all which way. So finally I got to get my trophy.
Wait, why does Wikipedia say you're married?
I don't know, because it's incorrect, but I haven't changed it because I wouldn't know how to edit the page.
Do you know who that is? That's an ex-lover who's done that.
Do you think?
Yeah, it's classic.
What, they tried to marry me off?
Well, if I can't have her, no one can. That's what's happened.
To be fair, I sort of am practically married. Angela, aka Saint Ange, as my friends call him, which is really irritating. We've been together for 20 years and we have two children. So we are married, really, but
as
technically not married. Just if anyone can be asked to change, that'd be great. But someone did once edit my Wikipedia page and said that I had a speech impediment because I dropped my G's.
Oh my gosh.
I had a speech impediment because I dropped my G's.
Is that Henry Higgins?
I don't know. Someone that finds my G-dropping tendencies very irritating.
No, they're going to hate
this
podcast.
That's got taken out now.
So while we talk about your enunciation, for people that would like to hear more of it, you have a podcast. Do you see what I'm doing here?
Yeah,
is this nice?
Like
is this smooth?
That was a smooth transition.
Thank you.
Yeah, there
Thank
we
you.
Go. That's it. Yeah, that was professional as hell.
Much smoother than me. So well done.
So you've got this new podcast called Electoral Dysfunction, an all-women cast.
Yeah, Jess Phillips, who's the Labour MP, and it's with Ruth Davidson, Baroness Davidson. She's in the Lords, but she hates it when we call her Baroness, so we do it all the time. And she used to lead the Scottish Conservatives. So we were trying to get someone from Labour, someone from the Conservatives. I sit in the middle and try to govern the ungovernable. They are the hardest people to try and manage. So I've sort of given up. So the recordings are just insanely long now. And a nightmare to edit. So sorry about that, Philly. And we get together and we chat about politics, but we try and do a bit of what you guys do on this podcast. We try and make it fun as well. I don't want it to be too worthy because we want it to be accessible and we want people to enjoy hanging out with us. And politics sometimes is quite intense, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it really is.
Well, a bit aggro, and we don't want it to be aggro because who wants to sit on Saturday morning in their house going for a walk at the football pitch watching their kids and someone being really aggro in their ear? So I'm trying to be de-aggroed. Well, it's hard for me.
Yeah, and I'm going to make it even harder for you because speaking of intense aggro, you were at Lee Anderson's press conference on Monday. Let's have a listen to you trying to ask him a question.
Mm. Beth, you next.
Thank you. Mr. Anderson, you talked there about a lot of soul searching. You were a Labour backer, then you were a Conservative MP, now you're defecting to Reform. What do you say to people that say the problem isn't all these parties, the problem is you, and this is all about attention seeking, and this has been very disloyal to Rishi Sunak, who made you deputy party chair, and also to other colleagues that have backed you very verbally in recent weeks and are probably very upset and angry with you that you're going to only hurt their chances in a general election? What's your answer to them? Thank you.
Country, constituency, and then party. Next question, please, Richard.
What do you say to your colleagues who feel really let down this morning?
I've given my answer. Next question, please.
Yeah, that was Lee Anderson, who is the former Labour councillor who then defected to the Conservative Party and is now defected to Reform UK. He didn't seem like a man who was happy to be there, Beth.
That's just put a downer on everything, hasn't it? That was really neg.
It was very neg,
that's
yeah.
That's very neg. But you're right, he doesn't particularly like challenge. Mm. And he was really irritable in the whole of that press conference. He is a presenter on GB News, and there was a stark contrast between how he dealt with Chris Hope, who's my colleague at GB News, the political editor there. And, you know, you clearly saw he didn't want to answer the question. And I think for Richard Tice, the head of Reform UK, that's quite embarrassing because he's there to sort of wheel Lee out as the kind of voice of Reform. And then he's basically trying to duff up all the journalists asking him what are reasonable questions.
Yeah.
Another female journalist asked him about some comments he'd made a few weeks back about defecting to Reform. He said, why would I do that when the Tories have given me a political home? Why would I knife them in the back? And she asked him this and he sort of said, well, that's politics, darling.
I'm interested in the sort of personal experience that you have of being in the rooms with those kind of people. But I do just briefly want to ask you about the politics of this from Rishi Sunak's perspective. How much do you think that this harms him?
It's bad for him in so many different ways. The first one is that it gives Reform an MP in Parliament.
Yeah.
It gives them a platform with Lee Anderson as now the sort of flag bearer of Reform UK.
Yeah.
Reform UK are not really interested in trying to eat into the Labour vote. They just want to kill the Tories. Talk to Tice. He says, I just want to take the Tories out. Now, whether he can or can't is a completely different question, but it's problematic because for those MPs that feel vulnerable to a big chunk of their vote, maybe move into Reform, it makes them really nervous. So he's got a party management problem and he's got an amplification of this now third largest party by polling coming at him. But then the bigger issue here is the way in which the Prime Minister has just lost control of his party.
Yeah.
You see it in all which ways all the time. He's lost authority. His MPs don't think he can win an election. Power is draining away, and then Lee Anderson defecting is an emblem of that. And when it was interesting, because when I was doing my calls around on Monday, because at these moments you're like, is this beginning of loads of defections? I didn't think it was, but you got to check that out. And then it's like, what's the knock-on effect for the Prime Minister? How much shit is he in, right? And what was interesting was everyone had kind of gone to ground a bit. It was almost like there's a resignation within the party that they're doomed.
Yeah.
And actually, do they want to keep agitating? And there was some agitation with some of the right wingers coming out saying we've got to change course. But there's just sort of a big black cloud hanging over them. at the moment. And for the Prime Minister, it's sort of, it's like you're watching him limp on with a party that is just, it's, they're out of control. The other issue from a party management point of view is now Rishi Sunak, what he's going to get is a louder voice on the right wing of the parliamentary party saying, you've got to be more hardline on environmental policies, you've got to be more hardline on trans issues and gender policies, you've got to be more hardline on immigration, you've got to leave the European Convention of Human Rights, because if you don't, we're going to lose all these voters to reform. But the thing is, in our political system, as we know, first past the post, it's kind of a big sort of blancmange in the middle of the kind, like, you've got to have this coalition of people that go from centre, maybe to centre right for the Tories, or centre to centre left for Labour. So while the right are saying we need to go further right, you'll have those in the kind of they're called the One Nationers, but they're basically the centre ground of the Tory party to the centre right, saying, hang on a minute, if you listen to the kind of Lee Andersons of this world, you're going to lose some of the Tory shires. And that's the blue wall that they've got. It's called the blue wall now. And that's where they're facing the Lib Dem fight. So he's being crunched on both sides. I mean, it is miserable for the man at the moment. I have to say, it's miserable. It's like whatever he does, he can't seem to kind of catch a wave. Well, not that I could imagine him surfing, to be honest.
I think you nailed the head, hit the nail on the head when you were talking about like what that means in terms of policy changes, because I would be lying if I didn't say that I had a little bit of instinctual joy when I hear about the Reform Party want to destroy the Tories. But actually, if you're a progressive, this is not something to take solace in, because they, in the meanwhile, are poisoning the public debate. I mean, I've been in family dinners where people can start arguing, and they've brought into the public arena something very poisonous and scary, something very extreme.
But the point is that on the right, and that can be the Reform Party or within the Conservative Party, these conversations are happening. Like, look at Liz Truss with the popcorns.
Yeah.
You know, the reform strategy is like, make Britain great again, get our country back, this sort of, this is all Trumpian politics, right? It's kind of populist right politics, yeah? And you might not like it, but it is there. And actually, we're going to have a debate about that up into this general election. Now, there's a debate going on in political worlds where much clever sophologists, that's people that study elections, it took me ages to learn that word, got it down. I love saying it.
I hate that you said sophologist and I thought of Sophology, that interiors brand. I was like,
Sophology is quite nice, isn't it?
Well,
I'm glad
that
I gave you a good thought while I was talking about right-wing populism. There's some arguments about, I don't know, maybe we are moving to more polarised politics, but look, you know, if you look at what happened with Labour in 2019, the Jeremy Corbyn agenda, which really pushed people away from Labour, Labour have had to come back to the centre ground, right? And a lot of people don't like it, but that's where they are. And now they're doing really well. And as the Tories kind of end up having a fight about kind of how tough they can be on immigration, it might attract a ceiling of voters, but it's not moving them in the polls, is it? And so, you know, there will be an argument within the Conservative Party after the general election, unless Rishi Sunak performs the biggest comeback I've ever seen. And, you know, I don't rule anything out in politics anymore.
The New York Times calls BritBox the best of British telly. Stream acclaimed original series, including Payback, starring Peter Mullen, Stonehouse, starring Matthew McFadyen, and Archie, the man who became Cary Grant, starring Jason Isaacs. Plus, discover powerful new series like Three Little Birds and the return of BAFTA-winning drama Time, starring Bella Ramsey, Tamara Lawrence, and Jodie Whittaker. Stream the best of British TV only on BritBox. Start a free trial at BritBox.com.
Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
What comes to mind when you think of Amber Heard? A liar? A survivor? A narcissist? The trial of Depp v. Heard was a global phenomenon, but I want to know, was it a fair fight? I'm Alexi Mostras, the host of Sweet Bobby and Hoaxed. In my new podcast, I'm investigating whether Amber Heard was the victim of an organised trolling campaign. Just search for Who Trolled Amber wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's lurch to the next scandal that's the Tory party found itself mired in this week. Allegedly made by Tory donor Frank Hester about the former Labour Shadow Home Secretary Diane Abbott. She said it's left her feeling vulnerable and frightened and has filed a complaint with the Met Police. The Conservative Party is now coming under pressure to hand back the £10 million he donated to them last year. Since the story broke, senior Tories have been tying themselves in knots on the airwaves over it. So Cabinet Minister Mel Stride defended Mr. Hester, telling Sky News that while his remarks had been inappropriate, they were not gender-based or race-based. It's an astonishing analysis of those remarks. Energy Minister Graeme Stewart told Times Radio he would hesitate to call Hester's comments racist, going on to say, "We've got a Hindu Prime Minister and he's our biggest donor, so I don't think this is a man who is racist," which, again, that's another 4 hours we need to talk about that. And Lord Marland, a former Conservative Party donor and treasurer, told LBC that Mr. Hester does a lot of business in Jamaica. He does a lot of business in Malaysia, in Bangladesh and places like that, so he's not racist. Again, I would love to point him in the direction of a history, even the Wikipedia page for the British Empire. Yeah. Just a cursory glance at it.
So clearly this sort of nonsense couldn't hold for long, and by yesterday evening Number 10 had put out a statement saying the comments allegedly made by Frank Hester were racist and wrong. If you think that means that common sense prevailed, sadly, this is Britain, you would be wrong. Because on the morning that we record this, Kevin Hollenrake, the Post Office Minister, said that not only would the party not hand back the £10 million, but if Hester offered another £10 million to the party, they would take it. Here are Keir Starmer and Rishi Sunak clashing over it at PMQs.
Mr. Speaker, the man bankrolling the Prime Minister also said that the member for Hackney North should be shot. How low would he have to sink? What racist, woman-hating threat of violence would he have to make before the Prime Minister plucked up the courage to hand back the £10 million that he's taken from him?
Prime Minister!
Mr. Speaker, as I said, the gentleman apologised genuinely for his comments, and that remorse should be accepted.
I think there's two things going on here, which is they don't probably want to give the money back, right? The guy's donated £10 million. Why it took the Prime Minister as long as it did to get to the point of saying it was racist, I think was a massive mistake. And I think that a lot of people were very upset by this language used against Diane Abbott, who has had more abuse as an MP than anyone else. What I think really happened was Kemi Badenoch, who is the Equalities Minister and a black female MP, and a cabinet minister, came out last night and said it was racist.
Yeah.
But people deserve forgiveness. So what she was saying was it was racist. I want to say it was racist, but, you know, let's not cancel this guy. Yeah?
Yeah.
Like, people will feel differently about that, but that was her view. And then the Prime Minister then came in and also condemned the comments as racist, right? So they've got themselves into a mess. And, you know, when I talk to Conservatives, I've been talking to them about this past day or so, you know, they say, well, Kemi Badenoch kind of broke the party line or where, what they were trying to contain it. And that was disruptive for the Prime Minister in terms of party management because he basically had to follow her. I think there's still now a live issue around whether they will have to give the money back. I spoke to a very senior Conservative about this, who thinks they absolutely, basically said, it's racist, it's not acceptable, we cannot take money from this man, we need to give the money back. This is not the end of it.
No, and also, isn't there quite a specific problem here? Because I slightly feel like one of the things that's being lost in the conversation is the use of the phrase, she should be shot. Because we've spent,
she's reported it to the police. I mean, this is also, now a police investigation.
We've also spent the last few weeks with a lot of conversations about direct threats to MPs' lives. We've had Rishi Sunak come out and stand on the steps of 10 Downing Street and warn us about extremism and radicalisation. And MP safety is something that we should be taking extremely seriously. Doesn't that pose a specific problem for the Conservative Party?
Right, and what you're really talking about is leadership, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right? You're talking about leadership of a prime minister who is really struggling to show leadership and control at the moment. And I think it speaks to a wider problem within the party, because you are right that the prime minister talked, he did this impromptu address on the steps of Downing Street. Like, they don't happen. The only time they happen is when someone's either resigning or becoming prime minister, or, you know, Boris Johnson did them for we're going to lock you down.
Yeah.
Right. And he talked about needing to come together to fight racism. And then he wants to lead on this issue. And then you've got this absolute mess this week, which for many Conservatives is an open and shut case, right? That the remarks were racist. They should have been disavowed immediately. And there should be a debate in the party about whether or not they give the money back or not, right? And yet it was all a bit kind of people being sent out and half apologising but not, and trying to kind of defend the line. And that's actually about leadership and about deciding where what was said, and in terms of our principles, how do we respond to that? And you just, you know, you get out ahead of it.
And I've said this before on this show, I feel that there is a hierarchy of racism in this country. And I feel that when there are allegations of racism around the Labour Party, they are examined thoroughly, as they absolutely should be. The principle is the principle is the principle. But with the Conservative Party, we are constantly encouraged to essentially get over it. Even with this idea that what Frank Hester has said is something that we should just move on from, you know, that he should be forgiven from. That's all well and good. Diane Abbott still hasn't had the Labour whip restored.
No, but who hasn't restored the whip?
Yeah.
It's the Labour Party.
But again, I do think that's a problem, because I think the Labour Party is scrutinised very heavily for race and racism, and was scrutinised very heavily for anti-Semitism. But I don't think the same scrutiny is applied to the Conservative Party. I really don't.
You say the scrutiny, do you mean within the media?
I think within the media and within our political conversation. I don't think that there is sufficient scrutiny, because if the same scrutiny had been applied that was applied to Jeremy Corbyn's Labour Party, that was applied to Boris Johnson, he would never have been Prime Minister.
And I think that this is an actual conversation, that I think that the conflict in Gaza, this has become more of a conversation, which is why can Lee Anderson make those remarks about Sadiq Khan and kind of almost get away with it until the Prime Minister was seen by many to being forced to act, whereas Keir Starmer has been much more active on anti-Semitism. So I think you are raising a point that people are discussing. I think one of the issues around this is part of how you change a party has to come from the people within the party as well. And it has to be a conversation or a fight, really, that Conservatives are prepared to have with their party. And ultimately, I think if they don't have it, they will just end up alienating more voters.
Well, there's another story this week at the opposite end of the seriousness spectrum.
What is that?
That I would like to get your opinion on. I mean, we don't know really what level of seriousness this is. It's not really political. Where is Kate Middleton?
Oh, Kate Middleton.
Where is she?
The thing that I really want to get your opinion on is this idea. There's been some speculation about where Kate Middleton is, which all seems to be a bit odd and prurient. Yes. You know, if she's had health problems, she is more than entitled to her right to total privacy. She doesn't owe us a public appearance. It's very strange. But then something really strange happened over the weekend, where a photo was released that various press agencies, I think the AP was the first one, have refused to use as a source.
It's called a kill notice.
What does that mean?
Right, so on Sunday night, I went to sleep really early and then I woke up at about midnight. I don't normally do this. I normally sleep through. Yeah. And I checked my phone. I was like, they've withdrawn the photo. I'm like, what? What? The first photo of the Princess of Wales for weeks with her children on Mother's Day. And then I went into the tunnel, yeah?
Yeah.
3 hours later, I came back out and I knew quite a lot. So I might be able to answer this question.
The thing that I really thought about, and this is so ridiculous, but like a lot of my friends are like graphic designers and things like that. And photoshopping hands is really hard. And I just kept thinking, imagine one day you wake up and you release this photo.
I know.
You know, she's an amateur photographer, isn't she? She does all the editing herself, apparently. Yeah. And just the entire world is like, look how shit that Photoshop is. It's so rubbish.
But also, Maya Angelou is actually a former graphic designer, you know, and he can Photoshop. So she should have just, he'd have done it for 200 quid.
Well, this is the thing.
She should have just called me. I'd have been like, he'll sort you out.
He'll sort you out.
He wants to make my eyeballs look a bit whiter, like the whites of my eyes. It was great. I was like, can you just move my fringe?
Make me a bit thinner, please.
He's like, no.
What does the kill notice mean? Because that's the thing that I've never heard that before.
I'm just going to tell you what I found out on Twitter.
Okay.
So it could or could, and via Wiki, so it could or couldn't be true. But apparently, like, there, because obviously there's a lot of fake imaging and so they have standards about where, if they believe photos have been photoshopped, they don't. This is why having like actual press photographers that are not, but right, this is my bugbear. Like, they issue photos instead of having independent photographers doing it. But agencies, if they think pictures have been doctored, they will not put them out.
Yeah.
So this picture went into circulation. They then all had a look at it. And when you look at it, I mean, I was like, it looks fine. And I'm like zooming into it. I can't see it. What's wrong?
It's like people are studying it like the Zapruder film of the Kennedy assassination. Like, it's unbelievable.
And then I went onto the Telegraph and they were like, here are the 10. And it, you know, like when you do spot the, you know, when you're kin, you've got to do spot the difference. It's like the circles. So I was like, oh yeah, his arm does look a bit weird. Where's her ring? So why don't we just talk about this the whole of the podcast?
Well, I mean, like, I sort of feel like it will inspire eventually a kind of six-part series.
So they withdrew the photo.
Yeah.
There has been, I mean, one of my friends, half joking, sent me a message on the day going, Is Kate Middleton still alive?
Yeah, of course she is.
But the point is, there's loads of conspiracy theories now about what's going on, right?
Yeah.
And then, the next day, the palace got William and Kate to drive somewhere out of a drive so that there was a photo of Kate.
Right, okay.
But then because she was looking away from the camera, like, is it a body double? At which point I was like, please, everyone, you've lost your minds. The reason I think actually editorially it is an interesting story is because it speaks to kind of the mess that the royals are, that they're having.
Yeah.
Like having to manage like the death of the Queen, which knocked all of us. Well, I can't speak for you guys, but not me for six, because suddenly I was like, but she's been there all my life.
Yeah.
But they handled the transition really well, and Charles has been well received, King Charles has been well received. And then they're just in a, they're kind of in a difficult place at the moment. And this sort of, this news story that's sort of really unnecessary, and then it just creates all this clamour around them, around the Wellses, and especially if she's not being very well.
Yeah.
It's just a bit grim. But there's a bigger question about how much we are now relying on images being generated by the principals rather than independent photographers.
Yeah,
so maybe that will become a bit more of a discussion again.
Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
I did want to speak to you just about your life and being a woman in journalism.
We have to do it.
Because, you know, you mentioned about taking Boris Johnson to task on his comments and getting booed.
Yeah, that wasn't very nice. Then there's a horrible article about how I couldn't talk properly.
Oh, God. Right, yeah. Well, you have been the subject of all sorts of, you know, let's be honest, misogynistic, classist, nasty comments just because you are a journalist and you're asking questions, which you ask of everyone. One thing I'm always curious about is, do you think the tenor's gotten worse? Or has it always been like this, but because of the 24-hour news cycle and social media, we're now aware of the quite stressful situation, or if genuinely it's in the last few years, it's gotten upticked
in
terms?
It's a good question, Keiko. I mean, it's also about being in the public eye, right? Mm. So I was a print journalist and I had a byline, but my face wasn't all over everything and I wasn't on the telly, right? So when it first started happening and I got a lot of abuse, I found it really, really upset, like really upset me to the point where I thought, do I even want to do this? There was one guy who got a bulldog, you know, and would put, you know, red lipstick on it and send me pictures of me being a dog with lipstick. I'm like, come on, guys. But a couple of things happened is, yeah, I think it is getting worse.
Right.
I mean, look, we joked about that, Lee Anderson, but he was bloody rude to me at that press conference, right? And it was a bit like, I don't like your question. I don't like you. I'm not going to answer it. And
it's
like, well,
you're
an elected official. And you've invited us to a press conference, okay? If you don't want to do it, then don't be an MP, yeah? Also, Lee, if you are listening to this, which I highly expect you're not, you said that everyone's invited up to Ashfield and I want to come up, so you've got to invite me up. I really want to go and do that.
That's going to be the most uncomfortable pint. I would love to.
If Lee Anderson is listening to this podcast, I will give both of you 10 million quid each.
All right, Lee, I'm going to get you to listen and then I'm going to split the winnings. Anyway, it has got worse. Weirdly, it bothers me less. And I don't know whether that's just you build up a thicker skin, but also I put all the filters on.
Yeah.
I put all the filters on, right? So a lot of stuff doesn't touch me. And then the other thing I did at the beginning was I used to go home and I say, Angelo, should we search my name on Twitter?
No,
yeah, I was like, read some of them out to me. But when it was Angelo and I knew he loved me and he's reading this stuff and he's just laughing his head off because it's so preposterous.
Yeah.
So you make it into a joke, right? So it's not a joke, but you kind of have to laugh at it. But look, there's just people being shitty to you because they find a woman in a position of authority intimidating. I'm sure you both have this in your lives as well. Like, you just get abused because, you know, you're not white and you're in positions of influence. So like, people cannot stand it, right? So you get that. But the thing that's actually more serious and the thing that really bothers me it's not something that touches me, but it's like what's happened with Diane Abbott, which is death threats and you know, people, and it's happening to male MPs as well, where people are having death threats and they're having to get the police involved, and it has just got worse. And I'm afraid to say, going back to what you were saying about this kind of political parties not calling it out, and in some ways allowing it almost to trickle through because it might appeal to, I would say, a small part of our country. I don't think Britain is you two will experience this far more than I do, but I hope that Britain is broadly a very tolerant country and racism is something that is not tolerated. The problem is, as you talked about earlier, is that when it is perceived to be tolerated in any way or explained away in any way by political leaders, what is the cascade that effect down? And that's why the way in which our leaders behave, it really does affect the tone that is set, right? But unfortunately, I think we're going to go into a really nasty election.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to get worse. What I hope happens is once we are through that election and it settles down a bit, whichever way it goes, that perhaps a bit more tolerance can come back. I think it's been a really unpleasant political cycle, going from the Scottish independence debate in 2014 and then the EU referendum and then all the Brexit wars and then COVID, which really triggered a lot of people in so many different ways. Yeah. And then Boris Johnson's behaviour and then Liz Truss. You can see like it's built up to be a very toxic environment for politics, right?
Just as a kind of final thought, Beth has multiple mobile phones, all of which she says are work phones. What do you do?
Oh, my work phone.
How do you switch off from politics? Yeah.
I obsess about Arsenal. That's my new passion. Yeah. It's like a displacement activity though. It's like get obsessed about politics and know everything.
Yeah.
Actually,
yeah.
I don't. There's lots I don't know.
Do you and Keir have obsessed. A little Arsenal moment?
Yeah, I have Arsenal. So I've decided with Keir Starmer, just drinks, like at social event, like Westminster drinks things, yeah. They do. You know, I was like, just stop asking him political questions.
Yeah.
So we get in these huddles and then I just start talking to him about Arsenal. Then all the other journalists are like, would you just shut up about Arsenal? I want to ask him a proper question. And the last one I did was, who do you think is the best looking Arsenal player? And he just looked at me and I was like, oh, that's the wrong question.
But did
that's
he answer?
No, he just...
Oh, damn! Just,
wait, so who is the best looking Arsenal player?
Well, I think about this often.
Thank you so much for
joining us,
Beth.
Thank you for having me.
No, it's our pleasure.
It's time to name our hero and villain of the week. We're mixing up this week. Coco is going to be bringing the anger while I'll be bringing the love. So Coco, kick us off. Who is our PSUK villain of the week?
So I'm going for the former Conservative MP turned Times columnist, Matthew Paris. Now, look, I'm a journalist. I do understand that sometimes, especially in columns, you know, you need to provoke. You will take a strong opinion in order to encourage debate on the issue. But his recent column on disability benefits, I mean, I just could not let that slide. So the piece posits that the amount of money you can receive on disability is too tempting. And so that therefore people who would ordinarily be claiming universal credit because they're out of work are tempted to claim this benefit. There's lots about it that is problematic. I mean, I think anyone who has ever had someone who is long-term ill will know that this is some sort of cuckoo land that he's living in, where you can just say you have a disability and you get this supposedly tempting money. It's actually an appallingly low amount. I mean, generally speaking, you could go to Department of Work and Pensions and say that you have delusions of being the Messiah and, I don't know, you're missing several limbs. And they probably say, no, you sound fit to work. So, I mean, it sort of stinks of blaming the people who are struggling, blaming the vulnerable. So he says, I do not believe in ADHD at all, except as a catch-all for a whole gaggle of unrelated ways people behave. I think autism is a real thing for a relatively small number of people and a much abused diagnosis for a huge number. So that idea that ADHD does not exist is really problematic. For the people that suffer with ADHD, that completely stigmatizes them. And I think it also pushes this idea that if you have one of these neurodivergent conditions, that you're not working. I mean, plenty of people with ADHD are employed. Plenty of people with autism are employed. It just requires some modifications. And so there's so many different problems with what he's saying. So, you know, it's not fair to people that are claiming disability, you know, they need it. And it's also really unfair to people who are really struggling with those conditions and out in the world of work to have someone this prominent say it's not real and it's all in their head. So I think for those reasons, it had to be him.
Also, what is he, a doctor? Is he a qualified clinical physician? What on earth is it? What basis is he? You can't, I do not believe in ADHD at all. The fuck is he on about?
But on a positive note, who's taking home our PSUK golden statuette? Just for clarity, that's metaphorical. We don't have the budget for that.
I think it would be nice to celebrate Jonathan Glazer this week. Not that he's not been celebrated enough. He, of course, won an Academy Award for Zone of Interest. And upon winning the award for Best International Feature, he gave the following speech.
All our choices were made to reflect and confront us in the present, not to say, look what they did then, rather look what we do now. Our film shows where dehumanisation leads at its worst. It shaped all of our past and present. Right now, we stand here as men who refute their Jewishness and the Holocaust being hijacked by an occupation which has led to conflict for so many innocent people. Whether the victims of October the... Whether the victims of October the 7th in Israel or the ongoing attack on Gaza, all are victims of this dehumanization. How do we resist? Alexandra Bistron Kaladze-Hechek, the girl who glows in the film as she did in life, chose to. I dedicate this to her memory and her resistance. Thank you.
So at the actual ceremony, 1,000 people took part in a demonstration calling for a ceasefire in Gaza, which actually led to a delayed start. Jonathan Glazer, who is Jewish, was the only person to directly bring up Gaza from the stage during the ceremony, apart from several actors who were photographed wearing pro-Palestinian pins, pro-ceasefire pins. I feel two things about this. One, I thought the speech itself was a kind of extraordinary use of that platform. But also, I feel that Zone of Interest is in of itself a kind of extraordinary work of art. And it does what we want good art to do, which is confront the past and relate it to the present. The kind of depiction of the, you know, that overused phrase, the banality of evil, it really did do that. It showed you how people were able to live and work and go about their day-to-day lives in the shadow of, you know, the most horrific crime committed in the human race. You know, it's about the family where the father essentially was the manager of Auschwitz. And you see on the periphery of this kind of bucolic family existence, the most atrocious crimes being committed. And I think the film is an extraordinary piece of work. And I think that what he said and the fact that he wants the film to be related to the present moment, it was extremely powerful. And I thought it was really heartening to see somebody speak out on that platform. The speech has been praised, but it's been criticised. And Jonathan Glazer is not somebody who dashes things off. And he weighed each of these words very deliberately. He read them from a piece of paper so that he couldn't be misquoted. I have found some of the criticism has been quite willfully misquoting what he said. The key phrase is, we stand here as men who refute their Jewishness and the Holocaust being hijacked by an occupation which has led to conflict for so many innocent people. He didn't refute his Jewishness. He didn't claim to speak for the entire Jewish community. He was speaking for himself as a Jewish person. He drew a parallel between the suffering of the people that were killed on October the 7th and the people that are being killed every day in Gaza. Listen, I don't think that people are obliged to make political statements at award ceremonies, but it was very heartening to me as somebody that is a fan of his work and found Zone of Interest to be an extraordinarily and profoundly moving film to see him be willing to speak out in the present moment. So I just wanted to take that opportunity to celebrate Glazer. There are a lot of us who want an end to the fighting in Gaza, want the hostages to be returned safely and want the killing to stop. And he spoke for, I think, a lot of people who are living in countries where their governments are supporting what's happening in Gaza. And so for that reason and many others, I wanted to celebrate him this week.
So we've just got time to look in the PSUK mailbag. At Bob Earl 1727 commented on YouTube in reference to last week's episode in which we discussed the budget. He says, Starmer's framing of the country's credit card being maxed out is just wrong and taken from the Osborne playbook. On the basis that he's going to be our next PM, he has to be called out on it. We have had 14 years of cuts to public services. We cannot afford to have any more. Yet that is what both the Tories and Labour are giving us. We gave Cameron and Osborne a free pass on this. Let's not do it again just because we want the Tories out.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. We talked a lot last week about the comparison of countries' finances to household finances being something that has been proved to be demonstrable economic nonsense. You started talking about badgers last week and asking when people had met a badger, and I invited the listeners to contribute times they've met a badger. I should have known better than to do that because we've had lots of badger correspondents come in. Lucy Deso 2590 on YouTube says, Coco, I can relate to your feeling of badger meeting. I felt similarly animal struck when meeting an armadillo, a hawk and a barred owl in the wild for the first time. Way more special than celebrities, IMHO.
Armadillo, bro. Wow.
Brian Armstrong 3731 on YouTube says, a couple of years ago, I was out cycling, brackets riding back from the pub. We cannot, I don't know whether Brian Armstrong drank alcohol at the pub. We cannot condone cycling after drinking, and my front light picked out a badger, which I then followed for nearly half a mile before it heard me and looked round before driving into the hedge at the side of the road.
Diving into the hedge.
So Brian Armstrong there with a heartening tale of stalking a badger. And Al has emailed in to say, my only experience with a badger, I can't believe this is a political podcast. My only experience with a badger is when I wrote off my first car hitting one when I was 17. It's okay. The badger was absolutely fine. The radiator was not. Al has also added, also, I totally misheard Agony Uncle Nish as Angry Uncle Nish. And this feels like a much better fit.
Well, it does.
Listen, Angry Uncle Nish, it's nice to have a preview of what my nephew is going to call me when he's old enough to talk.
Just on the badger writing off the car. When this badger moment happened, yeah. I was obviously very enthusiastic. So I told anyone that I met. And at one point I told a cabbie, you know, guess what, mate, I saw a badger. And the cabbie was from that area. I was still in the area. And he said to me, the thing you have to know about badgers, very sturdy. That was the
very
phrase
sturdy.
He used. Yeah.
Well, clearly.
Like,
demolished
no.
Al's car when he was 17.
Exactly. Anyway, so Easter is rapidly approaching and we're planning to have a week off at the start of April so we can concentrate on eating chocolate, going to raves, which only happen on the bank holiday weekend, or just watching some other rubbish stuff. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But we'll still be popping
anyway,
up.
Anyway, what we do on our weeks off is our business, okay?
I am allowed my privacy, like Kate Middleton is. We'll still be popping up in your newsfeed, though, with a special bonus episode. We're going to be dipping into the mailbag to answer your questions.
We get so much correspondence week to week, and we're not able to get to all of it. So we thought it would be nice as a special episode to go into the mailbag and answer some of your correspondence. We would also love more questions so that it's not 45 minutes of Coco and me talking about badgers. So if you've got a question about UK politics or if you've got a problem or dilemma for your political agony aunt and uncle, then get in touch. We also want to hear from you if there's something going on that you think we should know about. Maybe there's a local campaign to improve people's lives where you are. Whatever it is, we want to know about it. Or for our international listeners, if there's something that has always mystified you about our weird and wacky political system, write in and we'll do our best to explain. By which I mean, we'll call someone who actually knows.
So get in touch with us by emailing PSUK. That's your line. Does it matter? It's my line. It's your line, my line.
I'm not going to be precious about who gets to read out the email address.
Okay. Get in touch with us by emailing PSUK.
Damn it, Coco, that's my line.
Oh, you know, you really should go into acting, genuinely. I was convinced. Get in touch with us by emailing psuk@reducelistening.co.uk. We love to hear your voices. So if you're feeling brave, send us a voice note on WhatsApp. Our number is 07514 644 572. And internationally, that's +44 7514 644 572.
Don't forget to follow @PodSaveTheUK on Instagram and Twitter. You can also find us on YouTube for access to full episodes and other exclusive content. By all means, drop us a review, but only if it's positive. We're not here for your honest feedback if it's negative.
Judging the music or?
No, are you going to sing the...
I said last week I'd do the music. And you know what's interesting about it? Is they actually cut that bit out, which I think was them saying, don't fucking do the music.
Okay, well, I guess you'll do the music and I'll read the credits over the top
of
it.
Okay, go on.
Pod Save the UK is a Reduced Listening production for Crooked Media. Thanks to senior producer Musty Aziz and digital producer Alex Bishop. Video editing was by Dan Hodgson and the music is by Vasilis Fotopoulos, covered specially this week by Coco Khan. Thanks to our engineer, David Dargahi.
I can't remember the rest of it.
The executive producers are Tanya Hines, Why Did You Commit to This?, Dan Jackson and Madeline Herringer. With additional production support from Ari Schwartz. Did you not plan this? Remember to hit subscribe to new shows on Thursdays on Amazon, Spotify or Apple or wherever you get your podcasts.
Did I just do another song?
Why did you not prepare for this at all?
I didn't know today was the day.
Did we record the podcast?
Do you know the tune? Like, genuinely, do you know it?
No, but at no point am I swinging into town going, I'll sing it this week. And I'll do a couple of verses of Bohemian Rhapsody while I'm at it.
Oh, no, that's a very me thing to do.
I'll say this for you. You're confident.
Oh, thanks.
Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
Hi, it's Martha Stewart. You know, I spend a lot of time thinking about dirt. At 3 a.m., at all hours of the day, really. What people don't know is that not all dirt is the same. You need dirt with the right kind of nutrients. New Miracle-Gro organic raised bed and garden soil is so dense, so full of nutrient-rich, high-quality ingredients. Miracle-Gro is simply the best.